Gate A4 by Naomi Shihab Nye. Wandering around an Albuquerque airport terminal after learning that my flight was detained 4 hours, I heard the announcement. If anyone in the vicinity of Gate 4A understands any Arabic, please come to the gate immediately. Well, one pauses these days. Gate 4A was my own gate. I went there. An older woman in full traditional Palestinian dress, just like my grandma wore, was crumpled to the floor, wailing loudly. "Help," said the flight service person. "Talk to her. What is her problem?" We told her that the flight was going to be 4 hours late, and she did this. I put my arm around her, and I spoke to her haltingly. "Shu dawa, su bedak habiti, stani shwe, min tfadlik sho bit sewi." The minute she heard any words she knew, however poorly used, she stopped crying. She thought our flight had been canceled entirely, and she needed to get to El Paso for some major medical treatment the next day. I said, "No, we're fine. We're just going to be late." "Who's picking you up? Let's call him." We called her son, and I spoke with him in English, and I told him that I would stay with his mother until we got on the plane, that I would ride next to her, Southwest. Then she talked to him. Then we called her other sons, just for the fun of it. And then we called my dad, and he spoke with her for a while in Arabic and found out, of course, that they had 10 shared friends. And then I thought, for the heck of it, why not call some of my Palestinian poet friends? Let them chat with her. This all took up 2 more hours. She was laughing by then, telling about her life, answering questions. She pulled a sack of homemade mamoul cookies, little powdered sugar crumbly mounds stuffed with dates and nuts, out of her bag. She was offering them to all of the women at the gate. To my amazement, not a single woman declined one. It was like a sacrament. The traveler from Argentina, the traveler from California, the lovely woman from Laredo, we were all covered with the same powdered sugar and smiling. There is no better cookie. I noticed my new best friend, by now we were holding hands, had a potted plant poking out of her bag, some medicinal thing with green furry leaves. Such an old country traveling tradition. Always carry a plant. Always stay rooted somewhere. I looked around the gate of late and weary ones and thought, this is the world I want to live in. The shared world. Not a single person in this gate, once the crying of confusion stopped, had seemed apprehensive about any other person. They took the cookies. I wanted to hug all these other women too. This can still happen anywhere. Not everything is lost. I invite you into a time of meditation with these words by Naomi King. Every day, says Naomi King, we experience hunger and yearning for food, for approval, for respect, for love, for meaningful work, for any and enough work, for home, for family, for friends, for health, for healing and hope, for the departed, for the newly arrived, for the green trees and the cool, clean waters, for shade in the heat of the day and for stars to light the velvet night. And every day we are invited anew to be thankful for food, for approval, for respect, for love, for meaningful work, for any and enough work, for home, family, friends, for health, healing, hope, for the departed, for the newly arrived, the green trees and the cool, clean waters, for shade in the heat of the day, and for stars to light the velvet night. It's hard to turn my mind to gratitude, and certainly hard to turn to that sweet childhood story of pilgrims in buckle hats feasting with friendly Indians. Of course, it is the flawed story that troubles me, and it is the moment, the present moment that we are in, the violence and the fear that are surrounding us. There is a lot to sort out in this Thanksgiving moment. Layers of reaction from layers of actual events, old stories from new stories. It's hard to get to gratitude, and yet here we are, on the edge of this national holiday about gratitude. I'm planning the meal for the day of gratitude. So I think I need to get myself to gratitude since I'm planning a menu around it. So I've gone back to pick up some of the threads of the early Thanksgiving story. There have been many tellings in recent years about the ways that we've gotten that story wrong. And one piece that I myself have only recently gotten clear about again is the difference between the Pilgrims and the Puritans. Those Pilgrims of Plymouth Colony and the Puritans who settled the Massachusetts Bay Colony. If Cynthia Young were here, she would be rushing up here to be clear about it. All right, come on up. No, you're all right. You can just give me the, if I get it wrong, just... Cynthia Young used to give tours at the Plymouth plantation, is why I'm calling her out in this moment. It's of interest at Thanksgiving time because it was those first colonists at Plymouth who had a somewhat reciprocal relationship with the native peoples that they met there at the edge of this continent. For about 100 people who arrived in Plymouth. And they wanted to be separate from the Church of England. They wanted a more pure religion, and they had given up on the Church of England altogether and wanted to try something new. They were a pretty democratic group of people. They wanted to organize their religious lives on their own terms. And it was about a decade later that the Puritans arrived. So you can, this is how I'm remembering them now. The Pilgrims were in just a little boat, and the Puritans, metaphorically, came in a great big boat. And the Puritans, there were a lot more of them. And they arrived here with some sense of a mission about how to show the world what righteous living was. They believed that God had chosen some and not others, and that the chosen would have a sign of being chosen. And that they were those chosen people. The thing that the Pilgrims and the Puritans had in common, which is why we fold them together, is that they believed in independent churches, like the one we're sitting in, run by the people of the church, organized around the people's commitments. We are living out what they came here to do. And as you have heard me say many times, the Puritans were a little harsh. They were pretty liberal with public humiliation, which isn't the liberal we're going for anymore. And I maintain an ongoing dispute with them, although I should let it go by now. Both theological and behavioral. They were harsh to each other, and they were pretty harsh with the native people that they encountered. They killed a number of people who wouldn't convert to Christianity. So that small boat of people that landed in Plymouth first was subsumed pretty quickly into the growing Massachusetts Bay Colony. And so the Thanksgiving story, flawed as it is, comes from those pilgrim people. And the Puritans did not have that relationship with the native people around them. So it started as two separate histories that became one, and yet they have different origins and groundings. So we inherit a complex history. That is true of everything, but that's the complexity of Thanksgiving and our religious heritage. We inherit a story of the first Thanksgiving which has some reality. There was a moment of the native people and the European settlers having decent relationships, the native people helping the Europeans learn how to adapt to New England. And we inherit the story of the Puritans, the people who arrived here, I think, thinking that they were God's gift to the world and that they were justified in being harsh because it was God's desire. Unitarian Universalists are a pretty direct descendant, religiously, institutionally, and in some cases genetically, of the Puritans. If we had to invite all of our relatives to a Thanksgiving dinner, sort of this imaginary historical Thanksgiving dinner, we would have to invite the Puritans. And then we would have to spend a lot of time before Thanksgiving dinner figuring out how we would respond to the things that they would say to us over dinner. You may remember at Thanksgiving many years ago, in which I talked about when the uncle says that thing, you can just say, "Wow," and that's it. I'm trying to get there with the Puritans. I haven't gotten there yet. Maybe I can have a conversation with you and you can help me get to that more balanced place about our Puritan heritage. But they came here because they wanted to purify their religion. They wanted to get rid of the corruption. They wanted to have something that was their own understanding of things, which makes sense to me. However, the way they went about that had a rigidity to it and a violence to it that sounds like some of the voices of religious fanaticism that we hear in the news today. And they understood themselves to be essentially religious refugees. It's complicated. People trying to find their own way in the world is everywhere. Rigid religiosity crops up everywhere. It tends to rely on humiliation, and it tends to lead to violence. And in the scope of human religious history, we are not very far away ourselves from both fleeing for religious reasons and some pretty harsh stuff done in the name of religion. So that's a Thanksgiving message for you. People, including our closest religious relatives, Well, they were awful to each other. They did it in the past, and they're probably doing it now, and it's happening all over the world. It's hard to turn my mind to gratitude. But of course, as the centuries wore on, the Puritan heritage changed. The cruelty lessened. And we've retained what I think is some of their great wisdom. Churches organized and run by people themselves, with the awareness that how we are spiritually and how we make decisions together is all of a piece. These ideas have endured when other things have not. So in the midst of their rigidity and harshness, those Puritans did have a vision of the shared world that Naomi Shihab Nye stepped into in Gate 4A. I tend to look back and see all of the ways that they missed, and they did. But I am training my mind to turn toward gratitude, not to miss the whole, but also not to leave a single gift behind, but notice the good things. You have likely heard or read some of the transcendent responses from citizens of Paris who lost loved ones in the attack. They talk about how grateful they are to have had their loved one, how grateful they are for the people who are around them now. They talk about refusing the hatred of the terrorists, refusing the violence, refusing the attempt to separate people from people. They talk about staying open-hearted to refugees. All is not lost. Sometimes gratitude comes out most strongly when we face great challenges. Terrible loss and pain can be very clarifying. We can suddenly see our purpose and our reason for doing everything. What is a distraction from that is put away. And then sometimes when life becomes ordinary again, in those rare moments when it's ordinary, we can get accustomed to things. Well, it's true that we get accustomed to our lives, whether they're good or bad. When difficult things happen to us, we sort of learn to accept it. We have all learned to accept a certain level of homelessness or gun violence or discrimination in our world. It's just how it is, right? You just live with it. And it turns out we do that with good things in our lives as well. If you've got a comfortable place to live, you sort of stop noticing how amazing it is, actually. If you've got enough money for what you need, after a while you take that for granted and focus on what you might not have. They've come up with a name for this: hedonic adaptation. There's another great Thanksgiving message, huh? You can pronounce it that way as well. It's useful for difficulties in life to be able to adapt to them, to be able to live with what is happening and not have it be a crisis all the time. And when we do it with the good stuff in our lives, it undermines joy and appreciation. And it undermines us being aware that the life that we are living is a good life. An imperfect, flawed life, yes, but a good life. And so we have to purposefully turn our minds toward gratitude. It is not always a reflex. we have to choose to pass the cookies around in the waiting room. We have to notice that we're lucky to be able to fly at all. In Naomi Shihab Nye's story, what the people notice in that airport, where they could all be very annoyed, what the people notice that they have taken for granted is that deep common humanity, that shared sense of being a people on a journey. Of the mess and the stories and the offerings that everyone carries in their luggage. The shared world. It's hard to get there. We have to speak a different language sometimes. We have to make mistakes in that different language sometimes. But it's there waiting for us. And so I invite you in this spot where we too are a people on a journey. I invite you to turn your mind for a moment toward gratitude. Perhaps toward the things that you have taken for granted. They've made a name for it. It's what happens to people. You don't have to feel bad about having taken things for granted. Just turn your mind toward gratitude. Think about the things that, if they were absent from your life for a few months, and then you got to step back into that life, what you would be glad for. Maybe for food or approval or respect or love. Maybe work, home, family, friends. Maybe health or healing or hope. Maybe the departed or the newly arrived. The green trees or the cool, clean waters. Maybe shade in the heat of the day. Or the stars in the light of the velvet night. I invite you to take a moment in quiet together. We people on a journey. And notice all that you are grateful for.